The following program is a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you like it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock. Click on the Donate Now button in the upper right corner of our webpage. Hello and welcome to Table Talk, a special monthly presentation of AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. We're glad you're with us today. I'm Dick Russ, your host, and we're very pleased to welcome to the studios of AM 1260 The Rock for the very first time, His Grace, Bishop John Michael Botian of the Romanian Catholic Church. Bishop, welcome to The Rock.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
We have this monthly program, as you know, Table Talk, in which we have the privilege of talking to the bishops who are in our area. And here in Northeast Ohio, it's something unique. And we've mentioned this before in different programs. We have not only the Roman Catholic Diocese in the Cleveland area, we have a Youngstown Roman Catholic Diocese, we have your Romanian Eparchy, we have a Ukrainian Catholic Eparchy, and a Byzantine Ruthenian Catholic Eparchy. So we are not at a loss to have many different aspects of Catholic life represented here, and we're glad, Bishop, that you're now part of this.
Well, it's good to be from the old country, as we say.
here in the new country, and we're going to talk about that, how that all fits together. Before we get going on this episode of Table Talk, Bishop John Michael, would you be so kind as to open our show with prayer?
Sure. If you don't mind it, taking something from not from the Byzantine tradition, I have a favorite prayer by Blessed Charles de Foucault. Father, I abandon myself into your hands. Do with me what you will. Whatever you may do, I thank you. I am ready for all. I accept all. Let only your will be done in me and in all your creatures. I wish no more than this, O Lord. Into your hands I commend my soul. I offer it to you with all the love of my heart, for I love you, Lord, and so need to give myself, to surrender myself into your hands without reserve and with boundless confidence, for you are my Father. Glory to the Father, and to the Son, and to the Holy Spirit, now and always, and forever and ever. Amen.
Amen. Thank you. We're with Bishop John Michael Botian, who is the Eparch of the Romanian Catholic Eparchy of St. George, based in Canton, Ohio. And we're glad that you, again, have made the trip to be with us here at AM 1260, The Rock, at Cleveland Catholic Radio. Bishop, are you from the Northern Ohio area? What is a little bit of your personal background?
I'm from Canton. Okay. My home parish became our cathedral. And because we are not exactly economically that well off, I live at home with my mom. I brought in a priest for the cathedral who had 7 children, and I decided he needed the house at the cathedral more than I did, and Mom took me back home, and now she won't let me leave. So what can I say?
And so have you spent your, say, educational career both here and in other places, and then your ordination, a little bit of background on that?
Well, okay. I actually started out with the Capuchin Franciscans, so I spent 1 year at St. Fidela Seminary back when it was there in Herman, Pennsylvania, in Butler County. And I loved the community, and I very much like the Franciscan charism. And it was through them, that I actually rediscovered my own church, or discovered it for the first time. One of the issues that I had growing up, and it was right after the council, was that our liturgy, for instance, and everything I knew in was in Romanian. Everything about my church is in Romanian, including the gospel, including the homily, and I didn't speak Romanian. So that meant that I never actually heard the gospel in my entire youth, just what I read and what I was able to teach myself. And I never heard a homily growing up. But it was the liturgy that sort of kept me and kind of won me over and led me into what I was discerning as a vocation. But it was then subsequently I went to spend the rest of my undergraduate life at the Catholic University of America, majoring in philosophy, but as a candidate for the Capuchins. And there's a Capuchin monastery right across the street, you probably know, from the Ukrainian seminary on Harewood Road. And that was where I was to maintain my connection and eventually where I served my postulancy. But the porter there, the brother porter, was a deacon at a nearby Melkite church called Holy Transfiguration, which is now in McLean, Virginia. And I went there. He told me I had to go visit his church sometime. He had a very Middle Eastern sounding name, Malachi McHugh. But nevertheless, he was a deacon at this church that was mostly Palestinians, Jordanians, Lebanese, Syrians, Americans. In fact, a lot of people from the political scene in Washington, including, well, never mind. It was a very vibrant parish, and I went there, and the liturgy was in English. There were children. Everybody sang. They preached the gospel in English. I heard that.
The Melkite liturgy.
Melkite, yes. And so learned a little bit about the history of that, where, you know, the first Catholic priest, if I'm not mistaken, to celebrate a Catholic liturgy in English was eventually Archbishop Joseph Rea, when he was the pastor of their Melkite church in Birmingham, Alabama, and got into lots of hot water with the local bishop for celebrating the Melkite liturgy in English in the 50s. But he actually, you know, broke ice and led the way for the rest of us. I was won over by a very articulate priest who was very good at celebrating the liturgy and taught me a great deal that I didn't know about my own church, mainly the Byzantine church, Eastern churches in general. And so eventually, after my postulancy, I kind of made up my mind that I couldn't go in both directions at once. I really would have liked to.
Must have been very attractive to you then, what you saw at the English version of the Melkite liturgy.
It definitely was. It definitely was. But so was the community, and so was the Franciscan charism. And I had met some wonderful people through my association with them. One is the current Archbishop of Philadelphia, was my first spiritual director. Mm-hmm. And the other is now Cardinal O'Malley from Boston, was a member of our community in Washington at the time.
He was also a native Clevelander.
Absolutely. That's right. Yep. I discovered that St. Francis was bringing me where I was so he could take me under the tent in Damietta, if you will, and rediscover my own church. And so from there, I went to St. Gregory Seminary in Newton, Massachusetts, which the Melkites were operating at the time, which is a house of formation. In Newton, it was an experimental program. Our core curriculum was at Holy Cross Greek Orthodox School of Theology. So we had to take a certain core curriculum there, a certain limited number of credits. But we had the rest of the institutions of the Boston Theological Institute to put our program together with. And we had some pretty decent people on the board of that seminary, including Father Frederick McManus, who was a well-known canonist at the time, and Father Aidan Cavanaugh, who was at Yale University and a liturgist, and Father Brian Hare, who's still alive and still working in Boston. Yeah. So we had a decent program put together, and I was able to take advantage of it fully. But the Hound of Heaven, being who the Hound of Heaven is, I had a tough time actually making up my mind about the priesthood. Till I figured out eventually later on in life that you have to make up your mind every day on something like that. I think marriage is not that different. So you wake up in the morning and think, I'm going to continue this path of love for another 24 hours at least. You know,
one day at a time.
One day at a time, exactly. And so after having stopped out, I came back, and then eventually our own eparchy was created, exarchate actually, which is a sort of like in 1982.
That was by now Saint Pope John Paul II.
Exactly. He if to tell the story that my predecessor told, which Pope Saint John Paul told him, is that he decided they needed to do something for Romania. And what was he going to do? One of them was he named one of our priests who had been in exile in Rome an archbishop and the secretary to the Congregation for the Causes of the Saints. And the other thing he decided to do was to create the Exarchate in the United States. And finally, after so many years of asking, giving us a bishop. And that was in 1982, only 1982. So then I went to Catholic Theological Union because we didn't have any parishes at the time in the New England. And I wanted to go someplace where we had parishes in the area. And we had actually four in the area at the time. And we have one closed and a new parish in Chicago. So we're still pretty heavily out in the Midwest.
Yes. Where the people settled.
That's basically. Exactly, because when my grandparents' generation came, they came for the economy at the beginning of the 20th century. We know all about that here in northeastern Ohio.
Right, yeah. No matter what, there's so many people whose, you know, roots and lineage are from Eastern Europe.
Absolutely.
And it's a similar story. There are parts of each story that are almost the same, whether they came between the two wars, after the war, more recently. Some of the groups are now in the fourth wave or the fifth wave of immigrants, because we've been at this now about 120, 130 years in some cases or more. I think many of the Romanians here, they came, it's at least 100 years ago. No, there's a Romanian church in Cleveland. That's
the first
Romanian 1905.
Church. Yes, exactly.
Like
first Romanian church in the United States of any denomination, St. Helena.
First in the U.S.?
Yes, on West 65th and Detroit. And I'm sorry, West Detroit and West 65th, it's still, interestingly, more of an American than an American, or Romanian rather, than American community because of that, the new waves of immigrants that have come into the area. And because of the established community here in Cleveland, they knew to come to Cleveland. Family is here and so forth. So,
you were ordained what year to the priesthood?
1986.
86. Mm-hmm. And that was in the, were you ordained in the Romanian Rite?
That's right. By Bishop Louis Puskas, our first bishop, at our cathedral, my home parish, St. George in Canton, Ohio. That's where all of my ordinations took place, deacon, priest, bishop. So. Yeah.
And you've been the bishop since?
1996. I was administrator since 1993. In fact, I met somebody who was from the Congregation for Eastern Churches at the time, was now a nuncio, and he said, "We were waiting for you to complete your 10th year of priesthood."
Aha.
And I thought, well, okay, some bets are better than others, I suppose.
Yeah, and you are the lone bishop of the Romanian Catholic Church, not only in the United States, but in North America. Is that right?
That's right. Our eparchy has jurisdiction in the United States and Canada. And I'm the only Romanian Catholic bishop outside of Romania.
Your territory is, and I know I read your blog, you said, my territory is vast.
But you have responsibility. Did you read the next line?
Exactly. My territory is you. And I said, Bishop, when we talked before we went on the air here, that's something I'd really like to get into for a few minutes with you. And by the way, you're listening to Table Talk, special presentation of AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. Our guest today is His Grace, Bishop John Michael Botian of the Romanian Catholic Church. His see is in Canton, Ohio, and his territory is vast, all of the United States and all of Canada. And one of Bishop's quotes is, "My territory is vast, my territory is you." Tell me about that, Bishop.
Well, I guess if you describe what you do in terms of geography and jurisdiction, that's one thing. But if you describe what you do in terms of mission, in terms of what it is that God has given you to do, then where I am to work is not the U.S. and Canada. Where I am to work is in the hearts of our people. And I try to keep focused on that. We're so tiny to begin with, even though we're in two countries or two parishes in Canada, but we go from Montreal to Anaheim, California. So we're spread out in teeny tiny little communities in the two countries. And the challenge there to be able to, I guess the word is reach, although that's not my favorite verb for something like that, but the challenge to reach everybody is pretty big, not only because of the geography involved, but because of our lack of resources. And also because, you have a bishop of limited talent here, and it took a while for us to gather a team together who could push me enough to get into the things that I'm doing, and I'm very grateful for them. I tell people our HR department is in heaven.
How many parishes in total are there in your see in the U.S. and Canada?
21 altogether.
21 parishes.
Including small missions.
Mm-hmm. And about how many people would you registered?
Well, this is what's interesting, and I hope I catch a few of our own people here now, because we're just for the first time going to have a census.
A census, yeah.
And so we've counted about 5,000 people, which was a number my predecessor used. If I were to go by, I used to manage our subscription list for our newsletter, and I thought that must mean we have some very large families if we're counting 5,000 people. We really don't know, and one of the reasons that we still don't know is because when the second wave of immigrants came, the last thing I wanted to do was to make them think that their church and the Securitate in Romania had anything in common. If I came after their personal information, there would be no way of establishing trust.
Right.
So just now, we're going to begin the very difficult work of trying to establish enough trust to find out who we are, how many we are, what we do, what our talents and gifts are, and where we are. Because outside of a few new missions, well, several new missions actually, and our established parishes, we've got to be, there are more of us in more places around the country, and I want to find out where.
Where they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if I may, one of the real difficulties of all the Eastern Catholic churches in the United States is that we're stuck in places that are not exactly, a lot of them are not the most attractive places in the U.S. and Canada anymore. But beyond that, we're stuck where we are. We can't be everywhere as the Roman Catholic Church can, or the Latin Rite, which is everywhere. You don't have to go far
right.
to find a Catholic church. And so for us to be able to keep contact with our people, very, very difficult.
Yeah. When you were talking earlier about your attraction to the Eastern or Byzantine Rite of the Church, is the Romanian Rite of the Divine Liturgy similar to other Byzantine liturgies like Ruthenians, Ukrainians, Melkites, and so on?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's the same liturgy, but with differing local usages and customs that have developed over the centuries, different music. The Romanian Rite, for those who know, follows more the Greek side of the Byzantine world than the Slavic side, although there are elements of right. both in our celebration of the liturgy.
And you're one of 23 Eastern Catholic churches in full communion with Rome. We're going to talk a little bit about about those dynamics a little more, but Sui Juris Church, and that has been the case for several hundred years now.
Mm-hmm. We count our union from 1700, although it actually began in 1698.
So a little more than 300 some years.
Yeah.
Right, well, we'll talk about that when we come back. You're listening to Table Talk, a special monthly presentation of AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. I'm your host, Dick Russ, and our special guest for the first time at our microphones at The Rock, His Grace Bishop John Michael Botian of the Romanian Catholic Church, the Eparchy of St. George in Canton, Ohio. And as you heard the bishop say, his territory is vast, at least the physical territory. The sea is all of the United States and all of Canada. So lots of things to talk about, including the Romanian Church in Romania, the dynamics of people who come from a country which suffered under the yoke of communism for so long, and all of those factors. And again, as we know, Bishop, that's a something that's shared in common by many people here in Northeast Ohio, that particular story. So we invite you to stay with us as we continue with more of Table Talk right after these brief messages. Welcome back to Table Talk here on AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. Our special guest today, Bishop John Michael Botian of the Romanian Catholic Church. The Eparchy is situated in Canton, Ohio. You know, Bishop, we were talking about your own very interesting personal story, how many parishes and people and so on are in your Eparchy. And you mentioned that you have some mission outposts. They're not full parishes, but they're kind of missions where people, Romanian Catholic people, are gathered. Are those outside of Ohio mostly?
Yes, we don't have any new missions in Ohio. We had, but since the establishment of our Eparchy, we have missions that we did not have before in Toronto, in Montreal, in Boston, New York City, in Queens, and then Chicago, the city of Chicago. We were in the suburbs, you know, in Aurora, two parishes, and in East Chicago, and Indiana Harbor, which closed for a while. We had several parishes in Pennsylvania. One was in Scalp Level, which the Ruthenian Byzantines still have a parish there, if I'm not mistaken. We had a mission in Southern California, and I remember when I used to be able to go from, I think it was Pico Rivera to Hollywood, in 20 minutes to half an hour on a Sunday morning. You can't do that anymore. So I made up my mind. You can't have a mission in Southern California. You have to have missions. Mm-hmm. So we have one in each of Ventura, L.A., and Orange counties.
And these are all to serve people of Romanian descent, of Romanian Catholics, who Well, are recently settling, more recently, is that it?
Yeah,
more so recently. So the people are still coming over this?
Not so many now, but immediately after the revolution, quite a big influx of new Romanians. But there were also some people who had come in the during communism who were able to leave the country. And they sort of established these new locations that became, I think, magnets for the new immigrants when they came.
Yeah. The story of the Romanian Catholic Church is somewhat akin to that of the Catholic churches in other countries that suffered under the yoke of communism for so many years. And in the case of Romania, it was in 1948 then, approximately, when the communists took over, mm-hmm. and the bishops and the clergy and so on of the Romanian Catholic Church, which I would presume was somewhat vibrant there and, mm-hmm. and active, mm-hmm. were arrested. Mm-hmm. Many were detained. Mm-hmm. Some died in prison.
Yeah, all of our bishops died in prison.
All of them.
Yeah.
And it was one of those situations where the church very much was in exile.
Mm-hmm. We called it the Church of Silence in those days.
Mm-hmm. And that went on for some 40 plus years.
Yeah, 1948 to 1989. Yeah.
89, and that's when things ended in the revolution that put Romania in the place that it proceeded from to the current day. There's still a number of issues, but in Romania itself, there's what 20 some million, 22 million people, but it's highly an Orthodox country. Right, nearly 85-something% Orthodox.
Yeah, I've heard 85-89%. We were a larger church at the time, before we were suppressed, the second largest church after the Ukrainian church in among Eastern, or among Byzantine churches, mm-hmm. at least, 2.5 million. But now we are closer to 500,000.
Yeah, part of the communist scheme in all those countries was to force the clergy, the faithful of the Catholic, to become Orthodox. Mm-hmm. Property was seized and all that sort of thing, and it was the same situation in Romania.
Absolutely.
Was it not in the 40s and 50s and so mm-hmm. on? And a lot of that has gone unresolved to this day, but there are a couple of differing figures, Bishop John Michael, that the Holy See says there are maybe 500,000 Catholics practicing in Romania, and the government, their latest figures is about 150,000. Perhaps
funny.
Because they don't want to, admit that the Catholics are, as numerous as they might be. But still, that's a small number.
Sure.
That's not a large number of people. But right. but yet, every one of them, as you say, has to be ministered to. Mm-hmm. How tough was it there?
Oh, well, it was tough for everybody in Romania at the time, especially toward the end of the Ceausescu regime when the economy was so bad. But for us, it was a matter of, so many of our laity, as well as bishops and priests and sisters, who were either forced to become Orthodox by a sort of reunification council that the government called, and where articles of reunion were signed between some Greek Catholics and the Orthodox, so that immediately drove everybody underground, and all of our institutions all our buildings were confiscated, all the institutions were closed. But the church continued to work.
And you call it the Church of Silence.
Church of Silence. That's right. Our vicar general, who was actually one of the first priests to work on the cause of beatification of our newly beatified martyr bishops, was the son of a priest, and he grew up in that environment where his father had to work as a priest underground. Of course, all of our priests had secular jobs at the time. And the liturgy was celebrated behind closed doors, blankets on the windows, and that kind of stuff, very quietly and very secretly. During that time, formation continued, priests were ordained, and on, but all underground. Interesting story that this priest I was telling you, our Vicar General, Father Iuliu Muntean, interesting story that he tells is that they never used the word liturgy in the family. Hmm. They had a program, And we have a program at 6 o'clock in the morning or whatever. And so when the Securitate would stop him as a child.
And that's the security force.
Yes, the secret police. Force. They would ask him what time the liturgy was. And he said, we don't have a liturgy. He didn't know the word. He said, we have a program. That's always a program. And so it managed to avoid problems in his family. So these were tough times.
Yeah. We have some questions for you, Bishop John Michael, that some of our listeners have sent in and have suggested and wondered if you could address these. One is, dear Bishop, are the members of your parishes today mostly immigrants from Romania or are they U.S. Canadian born?
I don't want to say evenly divided. When I was growing up in our church, we were almost all, except for my grandparents' generation, we were all American born. Now, our established parishes tend to be more American, with some exceptions. And the ones that are missions, in other words, they don't have their own church buildings. Our priests very often have to have a second job as a hospital chaplain or something like that. Those are mostly immigrant communities. And so in Canton, we celebrate the liturgy almost entirely in English with a little bit of Romanian. And in Los Angeles, it's almost entirely in Romanian with a little bit of English. And so it varies. We're pretty, I kind of want to say relatively evenly split, but I think at this point there are more immigrants than Americans.
And that's because of the new wave of people coming in.
Yes,
right?
Yeah.
Here's another question from a listener to The Rock. Bishop, do you have the same problem as American churches, and I'm guessing by that they mean Roman Catholic churches, mm-hmm. in keeping your young people interested and practicing the Catholic faith? What about that?
We have that problem, but it's not the same problem. Or, you know, as I mentioned before, it's a matter of being able to reach people. Not everyone stays in their hometown because it's their hometown. People go where opportunity.
Well, people are more mobile than ever choice and by necessity today than ever before.
That's right. So one of the difficulties we have is people moving out of where we have a mission or a parish. Another difficulty that some may find a little bit irksome, that I refer to it as a difficulty, is marriage to Roman Catholics. We lose a lot of our own people that way because, you know, the Roman Catholic Church is the 500-pound gorilla. It's got all the resources. It's got the presence. It's got the... And so when one of our people will marry a Roman Catholic, almost inevitably, they start going to that parish. And then we lose them and their children and their children's children. We lose them. That doesn't mean the church is lost,
right,
though. So we don't, you know, that's... kind of sad for us, but it's
in a country as diverse and as heavily Roman Catholic as the United States is, or even Canada, I imagine that would be to be anticipated.
Absolutely, you know? Absolutely. And so that means that we have to, and Pope Francis is very helpful for this, and we have to reorient ourselves toward mission. You know, as long as we're trying to stay an institution that just is bent on its own on survival, we're going to be victims of the same demographics that affect everyone in North America and in the world now. And so we have to take a different approach to our own existence. And it's new. It's new for us because we're no longer living in a world where the Treaty of Westphalia stands, you know, whose religion it is the religion of the nation. And so in this free market of belief and practice, we have to remain the light that Christ has asked us to be. And if we don't shine, there's nobody going to come in our direction.
You know? Yeah, you have to make your case.
Absolutely.
In other words.
Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely.
I think you've kind of answered this next question. Are there any places where you have your services in the Romanian language? So you said in L.A., it might be more heavily Romanian.
Cleveland is mostly. St. Helena here.
St. Helena on West 65th?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. However, Canton, it's, again, almost all in English. Chesterland, for your, you know, the people up here who know where that is, it's pretty much all English. Mm-hmm. And we have a couple of communities now where there are few, if any, ethnic Romanians left in the community. Mm-hmm. And I'm very proud of that because that shows the missionary bent of those communities. We have a great advantage in our liturgical tradition. The Byzantine liturgy is a very beautiful liturgy. It speaks to people at levels that they're not used to addressing. It calls to them in some deeper level. And so that when I said we have different problems than the Roman Catholic Church, one of the reasons is that we have a completely different approach to celebrating our faith liturgically.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we don't have, for instance, is a theme. That was very big after the Second Vatican Council with the liturgical reforms. The theme of today's Mass is, turn to page 47. Well, that's not ever the way we've celebrated the Eucharist in our communities. There's a great consciousness of trying to step out of time and space, of everyday reality, in order to enter into, as one of our hymns says,
mystically.
Yeah, mystically, yes. Represent the cherubim. Put aside all worldly cares so that we can enter into the mystery that is about to unfold, not in front of us, but in our midst. Even if you don't hear those words, you feel them.
Yes.
You feel it in the music, you feel it in the gestures, you feel it in the whole ceremony. And that appeals to a lot of Westerners, you know, dyed-in-the-wool Americans who have never had an experience like this before.
It certainly does.
Yeah.
You know, and those of us who attend and practice in the Eastern Catholic liturgical form, we remember back to the quote of more than 1,000 years ago, I knew not whether we were on earth or in heaven. And those who experience the Eastern Rite divine liturgy, whatever form it is, Melkite, Romanian, Ukrainian, Ruthenian, for the first or second time, many of those people are very attracted to and even captivated by its mystical quality, its ethereal or heavenly quality that always seeks the divine on earth.
One of the real strengths of the Latin Mass is its straightforwardness and its simplicity. That is not one of our strengths. Our strength is to appeal to every part of the human person at the same time, all of the senses, the mind, the heart, and to keep reaching in instead of reaching out.
Yeah. Bishop, we have time for another question before we have to take another break. Dear Bishop, we really have not had much news about your country, well, you were born in the U.S., but Romania, since the fall of communism and the way the people got rid of their leaders then. What is happening these days in Romania with both the Catholic faith and the social situation? The way they got rid of the leaders then, you know, I was in the news business for a long time, and, you know, having roots in Eastern Europe, no one could forget what happened Christmas 1989, when the then leaders of the Romanian communist state were dragged out and executed on public square, or whatever it was called in Bucharest. Yes, Romania, to some degree, has not been a big news-making place, at least in general. And I wonder, from your perspective, just briefly, what is happening with the faith there and the social situation?
Well, our church is getting back on the Romanian Greek Catholic Church, or Byzantine Rite Catholic Church, is getting back on its feet on the ground. It's been a long haul to get organized. Our Greek Catholic Church is getting reorganized, or has been getting reorganized. It's finally attracting the attention of people who, in very Orwellian fashion, the very knowledge of the existence of the Greek Catholic Church in Romania was almost expunged from the common memory. Which is interesting because it's our church that's responsible for the consciousness of Romanian national identity. That was part of our history. And it goes way back to the founding of our church and the founding of the city where our major archbishop is located, which is founded by a bishop who was a nobleman in the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And one of his main aims was to organize Romanians as Romanians in a territory where Romania, namely Transylvania, and Romania was not one of the recognized nationalities in that area. You were either one of two different kinds of Hungarian or you were German, as far as being recognized there. So the whole process of becoming conscious of ourselves.
Identity.
Of our national identity was something that was a project early on of the Greek Catholic Church in Romania, and all Romanians benefited from that. Now, it's a country that's very much on the move. I'm amazed because I had the good fortune, if you will, of being able to go visit family in 1983, well before the fall of communism. and see what the country was like compared to what things are like now. And I also was able to go shortly after the revolution, about a year after the revolution, and see how the country was beginning to get itself together. And there are pluses and minuses. I mean, the economy is going. It's not all that great, so there are quite a few Romanians in Europe. And because Romanian is a Romance language, be able to learn languages very easily in Spain, France, and Italy.
They're guest workers there.
Yeah. In fact, most of my family now is in Europe or the U.S., you know, people that I knew from over there. But I remember when I first went after the revolution and I saw young people, and I saw something I had not seen in many, many years, but I was still able to recognize it. When I looked into the eyes of these young people, I saw innocence. A few years later, that was gone. And I came to the conclusion that capitalist atheist materialism is much more effective than communist atheist materialism ever was at expunging God from the horizon of human existence. So belief there, as in so many parts of the world, is in crisis. And that includes Orthodoxy and as well as the Catholic Church. In fact, because the Catholic Church is a minority there, among Romanians, because historically, the Roman Catholics were German and Hungarian. There is a population of Romanians in the older part, in the old kingdom of Romania, in Moldova in particular, and also around Bucharest, that are ethnic Romanians but Roman Catholic, which has posed a problem for the government.
Yes.
Yeah, because we're right after the revolution, they're taking a census, and they didn't ask your religion as much as what your ethnicity was, and if you were a Romanian, they automatically checked the Orthodox box for religion.
Yeah.
You know, so that's where those statistics.
The skew of the figures, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. That's kind of where that comes from.
Yeah. We're going to continue our discussion with Bishop John Michael Botian of the Romanian Catholic Church after we take a quick break here on Table Talk on AM 1260, The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. Thank you for being with us today, and we'll return after a couple of brief messages. Welcome back to Table Talk here on AM 1260, The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. Our guest is His Grace Bishop John Michael Botian of the Romanian Catholic Eparchy of St. George in Canton, Ohio. The bishop's see is all of North America. We've talked about that. Just before the break, we're talking about the situation as best we could and from the bishop's perspective in Romania today, heavily Orthodox country, one that, as you heard the bishop say, is trending more as much of Europe and the West is towards secularism and materialism and so on. And one bright spot, though, recently was the visit of Pope Francis to Romania, only the second pope in modern times to visit Romania. You were there, Bishop, for that. And what a remarkable time that must have been to have the Holy Father there among the Catholic people of Romania.
Oh, it was huge. I was also there 10 years ago for the visit of Pope John Paul II to Romania. And just watching the secular media deal with those visits has been amazing to me. For one thing, the openness on the secular side of Romanian society, both 10 years ago and now, was huge, much more open than the religious side of Romanian society.
They were curious, is that it, or welcoming?
Curious, but
or?
they also recognized, I remember that the commercials for Pope John Paul's visit were, prepare yourselves for the visit of, what was the word? A great personage. So whether it was because of his role in what happened to the Eastern Bloc and communism, that he was being appreciated, that he definitely was being appreciated. But at that time, he was not allowed to leave Bucharest. It was a state visit, not a pastoral visit. But his mass in Bucharest was huge. And it was recollected this time with Pope Francis coming, because during the papal mass in Bucharest, the cry that you kept hearing from the group was unity and love, unity and love, unitate și iubire. And that was very much in the minds of people. With the visit of Pope Francis, it was a pastoral visit. It was clearly a pastoral visit because he was able to visit the Catholic community in Romania, which is not largely in Bucharest, but there is an archbishop there, and that's where the nunciature is. And so he had state part of the visit in Bucharest. Then was able to visit Romanian Roman Catholics in Moldova, close to the Ukrainian border there in Iași. Then he was able to visit the secular Hungarian Marian Shrine in Csíkszombló, I think I pronounced that in Hungarian, but Csíkszombló, and acknowledge the strong faith of the ethnic Hungarian people in Transylvania. But then he was able to come to Blaj, to our home city, and celebrate the beatification of seven, all of our bishops who died as martyrs in prison or in house arrest.
That was a very significant part of his visit. The beatification of the Romanian Byzantine Catholic bishop martyrs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the whole country felt that too. And it put, as I mentioned before, about the relative success that the communist regime had in expunging the memory of our church from people. It did as much or more in bringing back, putting us back on the map in the minds of Romanians as not somehow against the national aspirations of the people, but the witness of our bishops was a powerful witness for the whole country and now for the world because of their recognition as martyrs. To me, they're martyrs. Let me back up a minute. I'm very much into ecumenism. I'm very interested in seeing positive and growing relations between Orthodoxy and Catholicism. Our churches belong together in so many ways. That's proving to be more of a difficult prospect than people, I think, anticipated even 10 or 20 years ago.
And you have a deep perspective on this with your background for a country that is both Orthodox and Catholic, and also your position on the Conference of Bishops, on the ecumenical... You're on the ecumenical...
Right, yeah. Well, I'm a consultant for the Bishops' Committee on Ecumenical and Interreligious Affairs because you might have trouble, as I did, figuring out how this happened. I'm the Catholic co-chair of the Dialogue with the Episcopal Church.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, I think the people who think of these things decided that an Eastern Catholic would be a good presence in that dialogue, and I think I do bring a different kind of perspective because...
You've lived this dichotomy or whatever for
true,
many years.
True, yeah. True. And the Episcopal Church was never part of our church. We were never a part of that particular history. So I can bring a different kind of perspective there, but I've been involved with the Orientale Lumen Foundation and movement, as Pope, as rather, Patriarch Bartholomew calls it, the Orientale Lumen Movement, since this is a foundation 23 years ago.
The significance of the martyrs, then, in relation to the relationship between the Orthodox and the Catholic churches.
Right. It's not that they refused to become Orthodox. They refused to be forced. That they stood for the Catholic faith.
And they spent the rest of their lives in prison.
That's
and
right.
Died there.
And very conscious of the role of Peter in the life of the church. And they were not going to set that aside even for their freedom. That they wanted to be faithful, not just to Christ, but to his church and the Holy See. They're very, very explicit about that. And so it's wonderful that the Holy See now recognizes the sacrifice that they made, you know, for the Catholic Church.
Yeah, it's very significant because that was one of the most covered aspects of the Holy Father's visit to Romania, the beatification of the martyrs. And it rewrote history to the truth. As the communists, you know, erase history and rewrite it, and you know, wherever that rears its ugly head, that's you see that beginning to happen. But the power of the beatification of these men who died under torturous conditions in prison righted that ship and let the world know what actually was happening and what people of faith will do, as you mentioned, so that they would not betray their own faith in any way.
I couldn't agree more. They were martyrs for the Catholic Church and martyrs for conscience.
Yeah.
And you can't separate them from each other.
Does something like the visit of the Holy Father have more than a passing effect, would you say, Bishop John Michael, on how people may live their lives and comport themselves in your native in the native country of Romania?
I pray. I hope so. It's unfortunately, I think, an element of the culture or the spirit of our age that, as another famous Greek, or at least one time Greek Catholic said, everyone's famous for 15 minutes, you know. So when, I hope that it wasn't just a media event, a flash in the pan, and becomes politics as usual and business as usual. I think there's a chance there that there's still the Romanian, if you will, sort of common culture, cultural identity tends to be on the negative side. Romanian philosophers are very tend to be rather dark, and so there is a real consciousness that there has to be more. There has to be more.
And add to that the recent decades of pain and suffering the communist rule.
Yeah.
We have a few minutes left before we have to take a last break. Bishop John Michael, you have been involved, and you mentioned at the beginning of our chat here on Table Talk that you are making an effort to reach your flock in many ways. And I know you had a newsletter, you're online, you have some of your homilies and talks and so on. You recently released an app for the app. Just tell us real quickly about how people can access a little more information about the Romanian Catholic Church.
Well, we're really just getting started here, but as I mentioned earlier, our HR department is in heaven, and some real talent has come our way, as a result of which we've also made some good connections with Catholic institutions and businesses in the United States that have been very, very helpful for this. One of the big shifts was to go from a monthly newsletter magazine format, because that was the cheapest to print at the time, to a quarterly magazine that really is a magazine. But the shift was not only in format, it was an emphasis, where the people who publish our magazine are in favor of what they call content evangelization. So it's not just the picnic or the memorial service that happened at St. Huzowatz, you know, 6 months ago.
Right.
It's the story of people and faith, and the faith of those people in their lives. And that's what we're putting in our magazine now. And so this next issue is going to be all about the visit of Pope Francis to Rome.
The name of the magazine is?
Well, Unirea, U-N-I-R-E-A, which is Romanian for the union.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't call it the union without getting it confused with labor in this country. So we kept the title Unirea, which is actually the title of our magazine, a newspaper in Romania at the Metropolitan See.
And anyone that's listening, if they're interested, can go to your website.
And we've got two now. And they I hope link to each other. But I know from RomanianCatholic.org, you can go to Unirea. .org, and that's UNIREA.org.
RomanianCatholic.org.
Start there.
Good place to start.
The app is from the company that helps us publish the magazine.
Right. You're listening to Table Talk on AM 1260, The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. I'm your host, Dick Russ. We thank you for being with us. We have a little bit to go here with Bishop John Michael Botian of the Romanian Catholic Church, and we'll wrap up our discussion with His Grace right after this brief break. Welcome back to Table Talk as we wrap up our discussion with Bishop John Michael Botian of the Romanian Catholic Church, based in Canton, Ohio, the Eparchy of St. George, which covers all of the United States and Canada. We've had a great discussion about the dynamics of the church here in North America, Your Grace, and the situation back in Romania, the persecution of the Catholic faith under the communist regime, a little bit of history, a little bit of your outreach, and that sort of thing. And one thing I wanted to mention is that you did have an ordination to the priesthood recently in your church, and that's a very good thing here in the United States. Tell us real quickly about that.
Well, interesting. This man and his wife were both came to the Catholic Church from a Protestant upbringing, so they had no connection with Romania whatsoever, or Ukraine, or any place that was particularly Byzantine. And through the very convoluted, but I would say unidirectional movement of their lives, they ended up with us. And he's an older man and married, and he's going to be commuting to a small parish in Pennsylvania to take care of them on weekends. And he don't exactly know what to say. I guess he would be considered a second career vocation, but you could see the priesthood in him. It's different, and he's very different from the rest of our men, especially the young men from Romania that we mostly have been getting lately. He's going to bring a more evangelical kind of perspective to the work that he's doing. And so his parish is almost all American, and they love the Byzantine liturgy, and so does he. And so I'm praying that it will be a good match.
What a wonderful story.
Okay.
That is unique, and I just wanted to make sure had a quick mention of it.
He moved from Arizona to Ohio to enable the process.
He didn't move here for the weather, that was for sure.
Definitely not.
Bishop, we have a few seconds left, and so as we wrap up Table Talk, we would ask you to kindly close our discussion with a prayer.
Jesus, we thank you for the gift of your sacrifice. Thank you for the church that you have left in order for us to know who you are and to demonstrate through you the love of the Father for all human beings. We ask you to ignite us with the fire of the Holy Spirit, to let us be the light and life that you want us to be for the world. I ask you to bless all of the people here at AM 1260, all of its listeners, and everyone in Northeast Ohio through whom this ministry may affect and come into contact. Bless their hearts with love for you, and may Almighty God bless you. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, now and always, and forever and ever. Amen.
Thank you. Bishop John Michael Botian of the Eparchy of St. George of the Romanian Catholic Church, our guest here on Table Talk. I'm your host, Dick Russ, Tim Bulwer, our engineer. But most of all, we thank you for listening and for sharing your time with us. Until next time, have a blessed day, and thanks for joining us here on AM 1260. The preceding program was a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you liked it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock. Click on the Donate Now button in the upper right corner of the webpage.